Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. We're back on the record in State versus Ashley Benefield, case 2020 CF3014. We're ready for closing arguments and jury instructions. However, I've been informed that there may be a change or an error in from earlier.
On 3.6, where it's the false imprisonment, I think your instruction said forcibly or, and you crossed out by threat, then you circled it, and I think we thought it was supposed to be left out, and she, so it's typo. It says Doug Benefield forcibly or confined or restrained, because you've written or, and I didn't catch it. So it's on the second page of 3.6F, and it's the first element of false imprisonment. And I don't know if we were supposed to say threat or not.
Okay. Let me hand out. Thank you for doing those and sending them. The reason I'm late coming back, I apologize. The copier upstairs is moving just as slow as the internet today, so it just took forever to make these copies. There's one for each the state and the defense, and I want you to check. I saw that, and I think I fixed it.
We printed them thinking if you found it, we could at least just print that page. So
look and see. There was also a few punctuation issues that I changed. So a couple of commas.
She was typing away at best she could.
I really appreciate you guys putting that together for the standards. But look at 3.6F. I did catch that.
Yes, sir. I see where you fixed it. Thank you.
Madam Court Reporter?
Yes.
Here's a copy for you.
Okay, so we have one other issue, Judge. In 3.6F, when the court lays out the forcible felonies, we kind of feel like they lose their individual identity because they're not separated at all. And we were wondering if we could label them. For example, the elements of the forcible felony of false imprisonment are two dots, and then do the same thing with the elements forcible felony of aggravated assault are three dots. If you look at the instruction, the way it's printed, knowing that they're going to take it back into the jury room with them, it doesn't seem to have an individual identity. It just kind of is all lumped in there. So what I am proposing, may I approach?
All right.
I've shown this to Rebecca. Is perhaps if we could just number them to give the jurors some sense that they're individual crimes. The only other thing we had, Your Honor, is the last paragraph on that page in deciding whether or not Ashley Benefield was justified. That refers to subparagraph A, and we were thinking it should come after subparagraph A, and then the rest applies to subparagraph B.
Thank you. All right, State.
I don't care about the numbering. I think that they're fine. I think Mr. Taylor's welcome to explain it in closing. I think it's clear they're each labeled what they are, and you have them in a sentence. We have them in a sentence. As to that paragraph, I don't think that paragraph actually goes to A or B. It's for the self-defense instruction altogether. It's not as to that one section, A or B, the last paragraph on page 2 of 3.6F. So I would just ask that it remain where it's at.
All right, final thoughts? All right. I think that how we have it is how I've prepared it is correct. The elements of the forcible felonies are laid out as discussed previously. They're not misleading. It's one solid instruction referring to the various forcible felonies. I'm going to read it to them, and I think when they hear it from me read to them, it's going to be imminently clear that these are separate forcible felonies. So I think they're ready to go. Any other objections?
No, sir.
All right, you ready to bring the jury out?
Yes.
You ready?
Yes.
Before we do that, all right, I want to speak directly to the observers that are in the audience. We are now about to begin closing arguments. This is when the attorneys are allowed to tell the jurors what they believe the evidence was, discuss how the law applies to this case, and explain to the jurors why they should vote one way or another. You will likely agree with one side and not the other. However, you are instructed not to behave in a manner that is distracting or in any way attempts to influence the jury using threats, intimidation, or sympathy. If the court determines that your behavior is distracting, you will be removed from the courtroom and prohibited from returning until closing arguments have been completed. This includes coming in and out of the courtroom during closing arguments if the court determines it is distracting to the jury. All right, I've got 9 copies without verdict forms. Just check. The ones I gave you should have the verdict forms, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yours does?
Okay, perfect.
And Judge, I will need the screen. So I don't know when you want to put it down.
All right, y'all can have a seat. All right, everybody have a seat. All right, before we get going, just to make sure one final time, did anybody discuss the case amongst yourselves? Did anybody do any research on people, places, things, or legal topics we've heard anything about? Or did anybody talk about the case with anybody outside of this jury?
No.
Members of the jury, both the state and the defendant have now rested their cases. I will now give you the initial jury instructions, after which the parties will give their closing arguments, if they wish, and then I will give you the final jury instructions before you retire to deliberate. The courtroom deputy will now hand out a copy of the jury instructions for each of you to review as I read them. The jury instructions are like your notes. You may write on them. After the trial, the deputy will collect your notes and jury instructions and return them to me to be destroyed. No one will ever read your notes. I will also add that I am confident that you can all read a lot faster than I can speak these jury instructions. Sometimes I've said to Miss Sarah that I'll take that as a challenge, but we want a good, clean record. So I am going to ask also that you stay with me as I read the jury instructions. There's also a point, like I said, where I'm going to stop, turn it over to the attorneys to do their closing arguments. So it'd just be better if we all stay together. Members of the jury, I thank you for your attention during this trial. Please pay attention to the instructions I'm about to give you. Ashley Benefield, the defendant in this case, has been accused of the crime of murder in the second degree. Ashley Benefield is accused of murder in the second degree. Murder in the second degree includes the lesser crime of manslaughter, which is unlawful. However, a killing that was excusable or that was committed by the justifiable use of deadly force is lawful. If you find Douglas Benefield was killed by Ashley Benefield, you will then consider the circumstances surrounding the killing in deciding if the killing was murder in the second degree or manslaughter, or whether the killing was excusable or resulted from justifiable use of deadly force. The killing of a human being is justifiable homicide and lawful if necessarily done while resisting an attempt to murder or commit a felony upon the defendant, or to commit a felony in any dwelling house in which the defendant was at the time of the killing. The killing of a human being is excusable and therefore lawful under any one of the following three circumstances. One, when the killing is committed by accident and misfortune and in doing any lawful act by lawful means with usual ordinary caution and without any unlawful intent. Or two, when the killing occurs by accident and misfortune in the heat of passion upon any sudden and sufficient provocation. Or three, when the killing is committed by accident and misfortune resulting from sudden combat, if a dangerous weapon is not used and the killing is not done in a cruel or unusual manner. A dangerous weapon is any object that will likely cause death or great bodily harm if used in the ordinary and usual manner contemplated by its design and construction. An object not designed to inflict bodily harm may nonetheless be a dangerous weapon if it was used in a manner likely to cause death or great bodily harm. Great bodily harm means great, as distinguished from slight, trivial, minor, or moderate harm, and as such does not include mere bruises. I now instruct you on the circumstances that must be proved before Ashley Benefield may be found guilty of murder in the second degree or any lesser included crime. To prove the crime of murder in the second degree, the state must prove the following three elements beyond a reasonable doubt. One, Douglas Benefield is dead. Two, the death was caused by the criminal act of Ashley Benefield. Three, there was an unlawful killing of Douglas Benefield by an act imminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life. An act includes a series of related actions arising from and performed pursuant to a single design or purpose. An act is imminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind if it is an act or series of acts that, one, a person of ordinary judgment would know is reasonably certain to kill or do serious bodily injury to another, and, two, is done from ill will, hatred, spite, or an evil intent, and, three, is of such a nature that the act itself indicates an indifference to human life. In order to convict of murder in the second degree, it is not necessary for the state to prove the defendant had an intent to cause death. An issue in this case is whether Ashley Benefield did not have a depraved mind without regard for human life because she acted in the heat of passion based on adequate provocation. In order to find that the defendant did not have a depraved mind without regard for human life because she acted in the heat of passion based on adequate provocation, A, there must have been a sudden event that would have suspended the exercise of judgment in an ordinary, reasonable person, and B, a reasonable person would have lost normal self-control and would have been driven by a blind and unreasoning fury. And C, there was not a reasonable amount of time for a reasonable person to cool off. And D, a reasonable person would not have cooled off before committing the act that caused death. And E, Ashley Benefield was, in fact, so provoked and did not cool off before she committed the act that caused the death of Douglas Benefield. If you have a reasonable doubt about whether the defendant had a depraved mind without regard for human life because she acted in the heat of passion based on adequate provocation, you should not find her guilty of murder in the second degree. If you find that Ashley Benefield committed murder in the second degree, and you also find beyond a reasonable doubt that during the commission of the crime she discharged a firearm and in doing so caused the death of Douglas Benefield, you should find the defendant guilty of murder in the second degree with discharge of a firearm causing death. If you find that Ashley Benefield committed murder in the second degree, and you also find beyond a reasonable doubt that during the commission of the crime she discharged a firearm, you should find the defendant guilty of murder in the second degree with discharge of a firearm. If you find that Ashley Benefield committed murder in the second degree, and you also find beyond a reasonable doubt that during the commission of the crime she actually possessed a firearm, you should find the defendant guilty of murder in the second degree with actual possession of a firearm. A firearm is legally defined as any weapon which will, is designed to, or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. To actually possess a firearm means that the defendant A, carried a firearm on her person, or B, had a firearm within immediate physical reach with ready access with the intent to use the firearm during the commission of the crime. In considering the evidence, you should consider the possibility that although the evidence may not convince you that the defendant committed the main crime of which she is accused, there may be evidence that she committed other acts that would constitute a lesser included crime. Therefore, if you decide that the main accusation has not been proved beyond a reasonable doubt, you will next need to decide if the defendant is guilty of any lesser included crime. The lesser included crime indicated in the definition of murder in the second degree is manslaughter. To prove the crime of manslaughter, the state must prove the following two elements beyond a reasonable doubt. 1. Douglas Benefield is dead. 2. Ashley Benefield intentionally committed an act or acts that caused the death of Douglas Benefield. Every person has a duty to act reasonably towards others. If there is a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to do harm, that violation is negligence. The defendant cannot be guilty of manslaughter by committing a merely negligent act, or if the killing was either justifiable or excusable homicide, as I have previously instructed. In order to convict of manslaughter by act, it is not necessary for the state to prove that the defendant had an intent to cause death. Only an intent to commit an act that was not merely negligent, justified, or excusable, and which caused death. If you find that Ashley Benefield committed manslaughter, and you also find, beyond a reasonable doubt, that during the commission of the crime she personally used a firearm, you should find her guilty of manslaughter with a firearm. A firearm is defined as any weapon which will, is designed to, or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. If you find that Ashley Benefield committed manslaughter, but you are not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that she personally carried, displayed, or used a firearm, then you should find her guilty only of manslaughter. It is a defense to the crime of murder in the second degree, including manslaughter, if the actions of Ashley Benefield constituted the justifiable use of deadly force. Deadly force means force likely to cause death or great bodily harm. Great bodily harm means great, as distinguished from slight, trivial, minor, or moderate harm. Ashley Benefield does not have the burden of proving that she was justified in using deadly force. Instead, for you to find the defendant guilty, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt the defendant was not justified in using deadly force. The law on justifiable use of deadly force is as follows. If Ashley Benefield was in a dwelling in which she had a right to be, she had no duty to retreat and had the right to stand her ground and use force, including deadly force, if she reasonably believed that such conduct was necessary to prevent A, the imminent death or great bodily harm to herself, or B, the imminent commission of burglary, false imprisonment, or aggravated assault against herself. The elements of the forcible felony of burglary are 1. Douglas Benefield had permission or consent to enter a structure owned by or in the possession of Ashley Benefield. 2. Douglas Benefield, after entering the structure, remained therein, A, after permission to remain had been withdrawn and with the intent to commit an offense other than burglary or trespass inside the structure, or B, to attempt to commit a forcible felony. The intent with which an act is done is an operation of the mind, and therefore is not always capable of direct and positive proof. It may be established by circumstantial evidence like any other fact in a case. Even if an unlawful remaining in a structure is proved, if the evidence does not establish that it was done with the intent to commit an offense other than burglary or trespass, then a burglary has not occurred. Structure means any building of any kind, either temporary or permanent, that has a roof over it and the enclosed space of ground and outbuildings immediately surrounding that structure. The elements for the forcible felony of false imprisonment are 1. Douglas Benefield forcibly or by threat confined or restrained Ashley Benefield against her will. 2. Douglas Benefield had no lawful authority to do so. The elements of the forcible felony of aggravated assault are 1. Douglas Benefield intentionally and unlawfully threatened, either by word or act, to do violence to Ashley Benefield. 2. At the time, Douglas Benefield appeared to have the ability to carry out the threat. 3. The act of Douglas Benefield created in the mind of Ashley Benefield a well-founded fear that the violence was about to take place. 4. The assault was made with a fully formed, conscious intent to commit false imprisonment upon Ashley Benefield. The elements of false imprisonment are as I have previously explained to you. If the circumstances were such as to ordinarily induce a well-founded fear in the mind of a reasonable person, then Ashley Benefield may be found to have been in fear. An actual fear on the part of Ashley Benefield need not be shown. In deciding whether Ashley Benefield was justified in the use of deadly force, you must consider the circumstances at the time the force was used. The danger need not have been actual. However, to justify the use of deadly force, the appearance of imminent danger must have been so real that the defendant actually believed the use of deadly force was necessary. Moreover, to justify the use of deadly force, a reasonably cautious and prudent person under the same circumstances would have believed the use of deadly force was necessary. If you find that Ashley Benefield, who because of prior threats or difficulties with Douglas Benefield, had reasonable grounds to believe that she was in danger of death or great bodily harm at the hands of Douglas Benefield, you may consider this fact in determining whether the actions of Ashley Benefield were those of a reasonable person. If you find that at the time of the alleged murder in the second degree, Ashley Benefield knew that Douglas Benefield had committed acts of violence, you may consider this fact in determining whether Ashley Benefield reasonably believed it was necessary for her to use deadly force. In considering the issue of self-defense, you may take into account the relative physical abilities and capacities of Ashley Benefield and Douglas Benefield. The defendant has entered a plea of not guilty. This means you must presume or believe the defendant is innocent. The presumption stays with the defendant as to each material allegation in the information through each stage of the trial, unless it has been overcome by the evidence to the exclusion of and beyond a reasonable doubt. To overcome the defendant's presumption of innocence, the state has the burden of proving the crime with which the defendant is charged was committed, and the defendant is the person who committed the crime. The defendant is not required to present evidence or prove anything. Whatever the words reasonable doubt are used, you must consider the following. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt does not mean proof beyond all doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible doubt, a speculative, imaginary, or forced doubt. Such a doubt must not influence you to return a verdict of not guilty if you have an abiding conviction of guilt. On the other hand, if, after carefully considering, comparing, and weighing all of the evidence, there is not an abiding conviction of guilt, or if having a conviction, it is one which is not stable, but one which wavers and vacillates, then the charge is not proved beyond every reasonable doubt, and you must find the defendant not guilty because the doubt is reasonable. It is to the evidence introduced in this trial, and to it alone, that you are to look for that proof. A reasonable doubt as to the guilt of the defendant may arise from the evidence, the conflict in the evidence, or the lack of evidence. If you have a reasonable doubt, you should find the defendant not guilty. If you have no reasonable doubt, you should find the defendant guilty. It is up to you to decide what evidence is reliable. You should use your common sense in deciding which is the best evidence and which evidence should not be relied upon in considering your verdict. You may find some of the evidence not reliable or less reliable than other evidence. You should consider how the witnesses acted, as well as what they said. Some things you should consider are, did the witness seem to have an opportunity to see and know the things about which the witness testified? Did the witness seem to have an accurate memory? Was the witness honest and straightforward in answering the attorney's question? Did the witness have some interest in how the case should be decided? Does the witness's testimony agree with the other testimony and the other evidence in the case? Did the witness at some other time make a statement that is inconsistent with the testimony they gave in court? Whether the state has met its burden of proof does not depend on the number of witnesses it has called or upon the number of exhibits it has offered, but instead upon the nature and quality of the evidence presented. The fact that a witness is employed in law enforcement does not mean that their testimony deserves more or less consideration than that of any other witness. Expert witnesses are like other witnesses, with one exception. The law permits an expert witness to give their opinion. However, an expert opinion is only reliable when given on a subject about which you believe them to be an expert. Like other witnesses, you may believe or disbelieve all or any part of an expert's testimony. The defendant in this case has become a witness. You should apply the same rules to consideration of her testimony that you apply to the testimony of all of the other witnesses. It is entirely proper for a lawyer to talk to a witness about what testimony the witness would give if called to the courtroom. The witness should not be discredited by talking to a lawyer about their testimony. You may rely upon your own conclusions about the credibility of any witness. A juror may believe or disbelieve all or any part of the evidence or the testimony of any witness. Now, at that point, if you would please mark that spot, that's where I'm going to ask you to stop. And I'm going to take a brief moment and explain the verdict form to you. The attorneys will now be given the opportunity to do their closing arguments if they wish. Sometimes they'll show the verdict form to you. So I want to take a minute to explain it and how it works. So, and I know you can't read it from there, and there you do not have a verdict form in your packet. I have the verdict form that I'll be giving you. In the Circuit Court of the 12th Judicial Circuit in and for Manatee County, Florida, State of Florida versus Ashley Benefield, case number 2020-CF-3014-AX. Verdict. We, the jury, find as follows as to the defendant in this case. Check only one. When it says that, it means as to A, B, C. So as a jury, you will deliberate and you must agree on either A, B, or C. A, the defendant is guilty of murder in the second degree as charged. B, the defendant is guilty of manslaughter, a lesser included offense. C, the defendant is not guilty. And what I meant to say earlier is you must agree unanimously. That is, all of you must agree on what the verdict is. Now, if you, as a group, you debate, deliberate, and as a whole, you find either A or B, then you must go down here to this series of questions. If you find the defendant guilty of A or B above, then you must answer all of the following questions. One, did Ashley Benefield actually carry a firearm? Yes, no. Two, did Ashley Benefield discharge a firearm? Yes, no. Three, did Ashley Benefield, as a result of discharging the firearm, cause death to Douglas Benefield? Yes, no. So say we all this blank day of July 2024 at Bradenton, Manatee County, Florida, and then it'll be signed by the foreperson, and the foreperson will print their name. And I'll talk about that when I give you the final instructions. Members of the jury, the attorneys will now present their final arguments. Please remember that what the attorneys say is not evidence or your instruction on the law. However, you should listen closely to their arguments. They are intended to aid you in understanding the case. Each side will have equal time, but the state is entitled to divide this time between an opening argument and a rebuttal argument after the defense has given its closing argument. State.
Can I have the screen, please?
Yes. And how much did you want to reserve?
Are you going to give a warning?
Yeah, do you want the lights down?
Yes, if we could just see the ones back there. Domestic violence is absolutely a real problem. There are many, many women around that are in horrendous situations. Women and sometimes men that are in situations where they're being abused and beaten horribly on a regular basis. People that feel like they cannot get out, they have no way to get out. That is not this defense, and it never was. Now, some of those women who are victims of horrible domestic violence may be justified in a situation where they have to use self-defense to kill their abuser. Absolutely, there can be situations where that might be a valid point, but not for this defendant. This defendant used domestic violence and allegations of it to make progress on her goal. And her goal was she wanted sole custody of that child at all costs. And to understand that, I think we need to go through the background, even though this case really is about what happened in that house. What happened in that house, the last moments of Doug Benefield's life. But we need to go through the timeline to see the tenor of this relationship and to see how it unfolded.
The bottom line is you have to decide at the moment that she pulled the trigger in that bedroom, was it reasonable and was it necessary? That self-defense instruction, it's called justifiable use of deadly force, is very complicated. But there are two words that are very, very important, reasonable and necessary. And those are the words that you have to evaluate everything this defendant did. So let's go through the timeline. In September 7th of 2016, this couple was married. After knowing each other 13 days and a 30-year age difference, they married each other. According to the defendant's testimony, very shortly after, there starts controlling behaviors and name-calling. Then, 4/15 of 2017, Doug Benefield has a vasectomy reversal. They decided, in less than a year of marriage, they wanted to have a child. This is about the time where the defendant says that there are these angry outbursts in South Carolina by Doug Benefield. And the state is not trying to say to you that Doug Benefield was an angel. The state is not trying to say that his behavior in South Carolina was appropriate. Not at all. His behavior was unacceptable at the time. But he also apologized for it. If you look at the text messages between him and Ashley, he says, I'll spend the rest of my life making this up. And he says how wrong he was and how stressed out he was. And he apologized. But that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is what happens after that. Does any more abuse happen after that? Within days of these anger outbursts in South Carolina, there's a lavish wedding reception where everyone seems to be happy. And then within about 3 months after that, the defendant gets pregnant. In the midst of all of this, she gets pregnant. The very next month, she moves to her mother's house in Florida because she's so sick and needs someone to take care of her. That is the last moment that this defendant ever lived in the same house with Doug Benefield, was August of 2017. Very, very important day. Within a couple of months after getting to Florida, the defendant starts this campaign of complaint against Doug Benefield, all with the idea to get sole custody of her child that she was pregnant. So she files for a South Carolina injunction while she's in Florida. She doesn't even live in South Carolina. She doesn't even live with the person that she's trying to get an injunction against, but finds it appropriate to get an injunction in South Carolina. It is a mutual injunction. Don't mistake that. The judge did not make any findings of fault. There was no evidence presented. No one was ever found at fault. The two parties, Doug and Ashley Benefield, agreed, fine, we just won't contact each other. That is not what we are used to probably in Florida for injunctions. Then, December 2017, so that's within a month, Ashley starts the series of allegations in Florida. So she files for this injunction in South Carolina. They mutually agree, okay, we're not going to talk to each other, we're not going to be around each other. But she starts a series of complaints in Florida. She starts saying he violated the South Carolina injunction, and she claims he's poisoning me. He's poisoning me and my unborn child, and also goes back to things that he supposedly did in South Carolina when they don't even live together. So on March of 2018, she gives birth. She gives birth after Doug Benefield has a lawyer contact her, because they're not really supposed to be talking to each other. The lawyer helps him write a letter where he says, I want to be a part of this child's birth. Please, I'll honor your wishes, but please let me be a part of this child's birth. Not only does she not respond, when she goes early to give birth, she doesn't tell Doug. She doesn't tell him once the baby's born. For weeks, he didn't know this child was born. Then she does not put his name on the birth certificate. Now, alleged behavior or not, she knows who the father is. Why is she not putting the father on the birth certificate? And then she gives this child her maiden name instead of her father's maiden, her father's last name. Then 1 month later, she starts complaints to law enforcement. She says he violated the injunction in South Carolina. She files for a new injunction in Florida based on all the same things in South Carolina. This is all based on the same information that she had already spoken about in South Carolina. And when she went to law enforcement trying to get them to file criminal charges against him for violation of an injunction, law enforcement was not on her side. And you heard from Detective Gillum about the conversations that they had. And the conversations that she had with Detective Gillum are the entire crux of this case. It is her motive. It is her plan. It is what she did everything for. He said her true motives were to use the criminal system to affect her family court case to get sole custody of her child, which is what she wanted from the very beginning. He said it was very clear that she was trying to use the criminal system in that way, and he was very uncomfortable with that. He had forwarded charges to the state attorney's office, let the state attorney's office decide, which they end up not filing, by the way, and she did not think that was good enough. She was furious. She said, and I quote, "If the judge sees him arrested, it will help me keep my baby." She wanted him arrested in family court in front of the judge and made that very, very clear. That was what was important to her. The detective said in 20 whatever years that he's been doing this job, he has never had anybody ask him to do that. Never. And she was very adamant, and they talked for 15 to 20 minutes. And she went from crying almost hysterically to aggressive and yelling at him and then screeching at the top of her lungs, all because she could not get him to go with her plan. She also said to him, "You will fucking arrest him in front of the judge, and I will make sure that you do." Then she said, "I will do anything I have to do to keep my baby, asshole." She wasn't saying, "I'm so afraid of this man. Please help me. I'm a victim of domestic violence. I need help." Not at all. She's saying, "I want to keep my baby." And she's afraid that this man, who is 30 years older than she is and a lot more established, has a lot more money, has a lot more resources, she's afraid that this man is going to get custody of her child instead of her. So after this discussion with Detective Gillum, in about September 17th of 2018, the second hearing for the injunction happens. Remember, this injunction hearing was in two parts. One was in July and one was in September. All of the same allegations. He's poisoning me, the stuff in South Carolina. Again, they're not even living together. And she fails. The judge in that case says no. No injunction. And this man will have immediate visitation with his child, who, by the way, was 6 months old and he'd never met her. It wasn't for lack of trying. There may be a lot of deadbeat dads out there that don't care about seeing their children and don't want to be around. This man tried everything to be around for his child, to be there for the birth, to visit the child, to see the child, and she kept the child away from him for 6 months. And the first visitation, you heard from Stephanie Murphy, the first visitation, all of a sudden, everything's glorious. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, the defendant wants to go with him. "I'll go with you." And now we're in a stage where we're acting like we're going to get back together. Because she knew the court system was not working, and she was afraid that if she didn't buddy up to him, he was going to get this child away from her. So it begins the charade of her telling him, you know, "We're going to get back together. We're going to be a family." She played on Doug Benefield's wishes. He wanted more than anything to have a family, his family together, to have his wife that he loved and this child all together. And she kept telling him, "Yes, that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to work towards." So that starts about a year of them kind of getting along, right? And then September of 2019, which is about a year later, Doug finds out she's dating someone else. He files for divorce. And a series of complaints start against Doug Benefield for now abusing the child. Which, by the way, were investigated by law enforcement, and not one of them resulted in any charges. And May 1st of 2020, the defendant, having failed in the criminal system, again, files for another injunction based on these allegations that fail in the criminal system. Do you see a pattern here? May 4th, only a few days later, after she files for another injunction, Doug files for sole custody of the child. This is Ashley Benefield's biggest fear, that this man is going to get sole custody. But she's making all of these grand allegations against him that he knows are not true. There's got to be something wrong, and it's probably not safe for this child to even be with her. So he files for full custody. And what happens? All of a sudden, she sidles up to him, and now we're getting back together. And we start to go to marriage counseling, and we go see Dr. Forrest, who referred them to Dr. Quintel, and they're going to marriage counseling about how they're going to get together. And to Doug, she's saying, "Yes, I want to reconcile. Let's get back together." But behind his back to the doctor, she's like, "No way, no how. I'm not getting together with him." Then she goes on all these social outings with Doug and the child, goes to the beach, goes to the movies, goes out to dinner, to lunch, swims at the pool at his apartment complex, giving Doug all of these mixed signals. We're gonna reconcile, we're gonna get all this back together. And in the back of her mind, she knew all along, she was just waiting for an opportunity to strike. And then 6-1 of 2020, the system sends them for an evaluation with Dr. Broder. And they're like, what is going on here? Someone needs an evaluation. So they go to this evaluation with Dr. Broder, and this deception on the part of Ashley Benefield continues. She does the same thing. We're going to reconcile. We're going to get back together. And then when she's not with him, she's saying that that's not true. And then towards the end of September 2020, but before the 21st, there is a last meeting between Ashley Benefield and Dr. Broder. He said it was in his office. She was leaving. She was walking through the waiting room and going to the door. And she's upset because this is not going fast enough. I want the report. I want this to be done. We need to move to Maryland. Why do you think she's moving to Maryland? We need to move to Maryland. This is taking way too much time. And she says to him, I'll take matters into my own hands. And that was 7 days, up to 17 days before, depending on about what time it was, he gets murdered. On 9/21 of 2020, after this comment to Dr. Broder, she goes to mediation with Doug Benefield, and they end the mediation saying everyone's going to drop everything. Because at this point, Doug had filed for a divorce again. And Ashley had filed for an injunction again. So at this hearing on the 30th, those things were going to be heard, as well as a motion, joint motion to release a report by Dr. Broder. But they go to mediation, and at the end of mediation, it's very fast because they all agree, we're dropping everything. We're going to Maryland. So that was the plan. Ashley Benefield had no intention of dropping that injunction. Look at the text messages between her and Doug that were introduced by the state for the week before this homicide murder happened. They're talking to each other about the fact that everything's going to be dropped. Give this attorney a call. Okay, I'll give that attorney a call. Ashley's telling him we're going to drop everything. And she knew that was not true. Her attorney testified, we were not dropping that injunction. We were ready to call witnesses. At that hearing on the 30th, we were going forward. Ashley Benefield knew that day it was over. It was going to be over. Her entire charade was going to be done. This entire get along, go along that she's trying to say was because of domestic violence. She was just trying to fake Doug out. And she knew that on the 30th, her ruse was up. Because if she goes forward with an injunction, what better way to tell someone you're not going to reconcile than trying to get another injunction? So what does this timeline tell us for what happened at the time of the shooting? Okay? It's background, yes. But also, it tells you they did not live together for 3 years before the homicide. And if there was violence towards Ashley Benefield in South Carolina, that was 3 years before. And they hadn't lived together since. And is that something that justified her being in such fear of Doug Benefield that she had, it was necessary to shoot and kill him? The answer is no. I do want to talk a little bit about domestic violence, and Mr. Ferris testified a lot about this wheel, this power and control. So I want to put it up there. First of all, the overarching umbrella right here is physical and sexual violence. There is no physical violence in this case. There is no sexual violence. There's no allegations of any of this, unless you believe the defendant that the day this happened. But there was never any allegations of physical or sexual abuse. However, it's a power and control wheel. So let's go over some of these things. One of the first categories, using intimidation. So this is, did Doug Benefield use intimidation to control Ashley Benefield? They hadn't been together in 3 years. The first year they were apart, they barely even saw each other or spoke. So how exactly was he using intimidation to control her? And there's no allegations of threats during this time. The defendant testified she didn't say that there was anything going on during this time. One of the other prongs is using emotional abuse. Same answer. They weren't together. There was no allegation of emotional abuse. The defendant didn't talk about anything that was going on during this three-year period that he was emotionally abusing her. She felt comfortable enough. She even said, I told him when he thought he was going to move in with me, I told him I didn't want to do that. She felt comfortable enough to say, no, you're not moving in with me. But yet somehow he's emotionally abusing her. then using isolation, how can that even apply when they're not even together? He has no influence over her comings and goings, over her daily routine, and she even started a new relationship with someone else. So how is it that Doug Benefield is exercising control over her by using isolation? And then minimizing, denying, and blaming. Well, nothing had happened in 3 years. So was there even anything to minimize, deny, or blame? Nothing had happened. And there was no evidence of anything happening other than maybe some things that the defendant said happened, but did they really? For instance, Doug Benefield's peeking into my window. My neighbor told me that Doug Benefield was peeking in my window. Okay, let's think about this. She said it was her across-the-street neighbor, okay? So these houses face each other. Their backyards are behind the houses. The neighbor said, I saw somebody walking in my backyard that had a ball cap on. It was dark. I couldn't see what he looked like. And when I asked him what was going on, why was he there, he said he lived there. And somehow this translates to this person is looking into your windows across the street. And the neighbor couldn't identify who it was. And here comes Ashley with her recording. Here, let me play this. Would you recognize his voice? Does that sound like him? Okay, it was Doug. Doug was peeking in my window. Really. Then the next spoke on the wheel is using children. This man did nothing but try to see his child over and over and over. Ashley Benefield kept his child from him. So if anybody was using power and control, it was Ashley Benefield against him. And I think if you look at a lot of these spokes, you're going to see a lot of behaviors on the part of the defendant that were actually using power and control instead of being a victim of power and control. Then male privilege is the next spoke. There was absolutely no evidence of male privilege. I mean, there was an email to the realtor to get a house, just as one example. And if you read that email, he says, okay, but I have to check with Ashley first. How is that male privilege? He's telling this guy he's gonna talk to his wife. Using economic abuse. Again, they didn't live together. Ashley Benefield's financially independent. She has her own home. She's completely separate, has her own car. That doesn't apply. Using coercion or threats. No threats. He didn't say there were any in those 3 years. None. There were no allegations that he threatened her or hit her or did anything. He didn't make any reports or threaten to report her to Department of Children and Families. He didn't say, oh, you better do what I say or I'm going to call DCF and tell them you're a bad mom. No, no, no. That was the other way around. That's what she was doing to him. There were no allegations that he was trying to get her to drop charges. Quite to the contrary, she was not dropping any charges of anything. And Mr. Ferris talked at the end of his testimony about domestic victim mentality. So let's talk about it. One of the things in the domestic victim mentality is covering for the abuser. You know, like making excuses, covering for them. Did you ever hear any evidence of the defendant doing that? Never. Making excuses for the abuser, making excuses for their behavior, not once. She was telling everybody, anybody that would listen. Not reporting abuse, same answer. She was telling anyone that would listen and a bunch of people that wouldn't listen. Dropping criminal charges, that certainly didn't happen. The domestic victim mentality, she won't stand up for herself. Never saw that with this defendant. And she won't leave the relationship or the home. She left. She left the home. She left the relationship. They were not together for 3 years. So how does this domestic violence mentality, domestic victim mentality even apply to her? It doesn't apply to her. And don't be mistaken about what applies to her and what does not. Even, like I said before, even if you think that Doug Benefield's behavior was inexcusable and abusive in South Carolina, you have to remember that we are talking about 3 years later, after all of this time has gone by, and there are no allegations of anything else in between. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the jury instructions that the judge talked to you about. I just have a few on here that I want to go through. It's got to be overwhelming, I know, when you read the packet. There's a lot of words. So I try to help break it down a little bit. So the defendant is charged with murder in the second degree. So I would recommend the way you go through this is check off the things that you don't have to argue about. If everyone agrees to one of these, just check it off. So number one, Doug Benefield is dead. That should be easy. Check it off. There's no dispute. Number two, the death was caused by a criminal act of Ashley Benefield. Check it off. She shot him. Number three, there was an unlawful killing of Doug Benefield by an act eminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life. Now that's a lot of words. So what does that mean? The next slide explains what that means. An act eminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind if it is an act or series of acts that, and again, check off this, okay? So a person of ordinary judgment would know is reasonably certain to kill or do serious bodily injury to another. Shooting a gun, firing a gun into someone clearly qualifies. Person of ordinary judgment would know that that would kill someone. Check. Let's go to number three. That this act is of such a nature that the act itself indicates an indifference to human life. Pulling a trigger, pointing a .45 caliber firearm at someone, and pulling the trigger four times shows an indifference to human life. So then we go back to number two. If the acts are done from ill will, hatred, spite, or evil intent. Now notice, this is or. It does not have to be all of it. Ill will is a pretty low threshold. What is ill will? Devising a plan to keep this man away from his child. Is that ill will? Sure. Filing complaints against him that are unfounded and nobody ever filed. Fictitious complaints, that's ill will. Trying to do anything she can to keep this child to herself is ill will. Everything she did was for this goal, and everything she did was to get Doug Benefield out of the way. And unfortunately, the way she did that was by killing him to get him out of the way. That is ill will, hatred, spite, or evil intent. Now, the judge read to you that there's something called a lesser included offense. And what you may have heard, but it's in your packet, is the way you should handle a lesser included offense is such. So if you agree as a jury that the state has proven a charge beyond a reasonable doubt, you should start with the highest charge. So start with second degree murder. And if all of the jurors agree unanimously that it's beyond a reasonable doubt that the state has proven their case and the defendant is not entitled to self-defense, then you don't even get to manslaughter. You don't have to go and then review manslaughter. You stop at the highest charge. You only get to manslaughter if you don't agree on the top charge. Then you get to the description of manslaughter. And again, check off the things that you are not arguing. Doug Benefield is dead. Check. Ashley Benefield intentionally committed an act or acts that caused the death of Doug Benefield. Yes. There's no question as to that. Now, the state did prove this, but the state also proved the added element of ill will, hatred, spite, or evil intent. So we have proven manslaughter, but we have also proven above manslaughter. And I want to show you the verdict form, and then we'll go back. This was the verdict form that the judge showed you, just to let you see it ahead of time. And this is the heading that the judge read. We, the jury, find as follows. As to the defendant, in this case, check only one. And here's A, B, and C that the judge talked to you about. Defendant is guilty of murder in the second degree as charged. Defendant is guilty of manslaughter, a lesser included offense, or defendant is not guilty. And then if you find A or B, then you have to answer all three of these questions. And then the foreperson will sign it and print their name. So the real question in this case is...
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something. But this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.